visit our website, rte.ie/mini. Now, a flyer arrived in our office last week advertising something called Shackleton's Endurance. Endurance was, of course, the boat that explorer Ernest Shackleton and his men travelled on 100 years ago when they attempted to cross the Antarctic. The ship came to a watery end, and the story of the men's subsequent survival and rescue is the stuff that movies are made of. And Kenneth Branagh famously did play Shackleton in a movie about those very events. Well, Shackleton's Endurance is a performance that is being staged in the George Bernard Shaw Theatre in Carlow on Sunday night next. It tells the story of Shackleton through spoken word, music and images. And not a lot of people will know this, but the biggest Shackleton fan we know is our very own Richard Collins. So we thought we would give him a treat and send him to a sneak preview of the performance as it was being rehearsed in Monasterevin last night.
So, I think we'll go with the first verse. We'll just try and concentrate on diction. We're all in the Midlands. We're inclined to forget our THs. The end drop. Just be careful of that, okay? Two, three, four.
We were the fools who could not rest. In the dull of earth we left behind. And burned with passion for the South. And drank strange frenzy from its wind.
My name is Brian Hughes, and I'm a traditional Irish musician, and I've composed a suite of music for this Shackleton project. Well, we're here in the church in Monasterevin in County Kildare, and we've come over here to meet up with the male section of the Monasterevin Gospel Choir, who are performing on the last chapter of the project, as it were. Really, what the show is an opportunity for us to mark the 100th anniversary of the Shackleton Endurance project. So on Sunday the 26th in the George Bernard Shaw, we're doing so in spoken word music, and also we have some beautiful graphics, photographs and some video footage, actual photographs from the Shackleton Endurance trip. John McKenna, the most wonderful poet stroke playwright, has written all the narration for this project, and he will be presenting that on the night.
The race to the South Pole was over. Scott was dead. War was on the cards. And yet, I could not settle for the leafy streets of suburban London. Nor could I content myself with the things that others thought important. But I saw for the trivialities they were.
John McKenna, among your many talents, is an interest in Sir Ernest Shackleton. People have these kind of surveys from time to time about who is the greatest Irishman who ever lived, or the one that you admire most, shall we say. And I've always said, when anybody asked me that, that Shackleton is the outstanding figure from this island, in many ways. Oh, he was a flawed character. He had his inadequate side, shall we say, but for courage, for extraordinary cool-headedness and excellent decision-making, this was the man. He was the man I would want to be with in that tight corner. Tell us about Ernest Shackleton's life. He's from this part of the world and begins there.
He is. He's from Kilkay, the village of Kilkay or Kilkee in County Kildare, which is about 3 or 4 miles from where I grew up. I can't say I was particularly aware of his existence, other than that every time I used to travel daily with my father to a Thai, he worked on the railway and I was going to school there. And he would often say that's where Shackleton was born, but that didn't mean anything to me at the time. But then about 15 years ago, I was asked by Lilliput Press to work with Jonathan Shackleton, his grandnephew, on a book about Shackleton called An Irishman in Antarctica. And I began reading up on him and I began reading his work. And apart from the fact that he was born in Kilkee and lived there for the first 4 years of his life, and then they moved to Donnybrook in Dublin and then subsequently to London, I was intrigued by a couple of the things you've mentioned. He's a guy I wouldn't mind being in a tight spot with either, because I think he would get you out of it. That's probably his greatest claim to fame, that although he never reached the South Pole, he never lost a man on any of his travels. And I think what attracted me was part of that, those flaws that you're talking about. He was an intriguing man. you know, when he was in England, he was regarded as Irish. When he was in Ireland, he was regarded as English. When he was at home with his wife and family, he wanted to be travelling. When he was travelling, he wrote these letters saying how much he missed his wife and family and how sorry he was that he wasn't a better husband. So there was all of that stuff. Apart from the adventure at all, there was that human story about this very flawed character. He was constantly in need of money. He wasn't beyond using his male charms to charm women to get money for the expeditions. So there's all of that stuff in his story, and that was really what intrigued me about him.
Right, we'll go on to the second verse and see how we go there, okay? Dauntless, just watch the word dauntless. It's a bit of a mouthful, okay? So we'll go again from just the second verse. Very same thing, just start straight in. We'll just... 2, 3, 4.
Oh, watch me leaning from the mast. What of the night the shadows flee?
John, I must ask you now about your oratorio that you're presenting on Shackleton. Now, in this oratorio, you're concentrating on the voyage of the Endurance, are you?
We are, because it's the centenary of the Endurance. Over a year ago, Brian Hughes, who's the composer of the music, it's a suite of music, it's an oratorio. It's going to have an orchestra, a choir, several other individual musicians, pipers, harpists and so forth on stage. He came to me and said, look, I'm thinking of writing this suite of music. It's in 7 movements. Would you be interested in doing something with me on it? And it was as vague as that. And we sat down and then we divided it up into 7 chapters of the story of the Endurance, about from the leaving of England to the final rescue of the men after the ship had sunk. And I did a rough script, and then Brian began to compose the music in response to the script, and then I would alter the script. And that's what we're doing on Sunday night in the George Bernard Shaw. It's that suite of... music, and then there are 7 chapters of music and 7 chapters of narration, which I'm doing. And Alexandra Shackleton, who's Shackleton's granddaughter, is there's a CD of the piece being released as well. She's coming over to launch that on Sunday night in Carlow.
The race to the South Pole was over. Scott was dead. War was on the cards. And yet, I could not settle for the leafy streets of suburban London. Nor could I content myself with the things that others thought important, but I saw for the trivialities they were.
Another area where he's exercised rather poor judgment is in his own health. He had 2 heart attacks, and yet he ventured off to the South Seas again, even though he was a sick man, really. And he drank heavily. And yet he didn't cut down on the booze, and he died out in the South Seas and was buried out in South Georgia.
He was. There's an interesting story. When he died and the body was brought to South Georgia, and then his wife was contacted and they said they were going to bring home his body, and she sent a telegram which more or less said, don't bring him home. Now, you can read that 2 ways. You can either read it like, he's better off down there. I mean, I suppose the more polite interpretation was, and what she did say was that was where he always wanted to be, and therefore it was more appropriate that he'd be buried there. But I sometimes think that running under that, there might have been that feeling of, well, hump him, you know. He went away, so let him stay away. That last journey, I get the feeling from reading his letters, from reading what other people who knew him had written about him, I almost get the feeling that that last voyage was almost a funeral of his own making, in the sense that he knew his health was bad. You're right, he didn't stop drinking. He had been told to cut back on the drinking or it was going to do him serious damage. He didn't. Partly his own excuse was that it was to kill the pain, but I think it was probably killing various pains. But I always think that that last journey was actually a decision on his own part to go, knowing that he wasn't going to come back, that whether he died on the way or whether he died when he was there, he certainly physically wasn't up to what he had set himself to do. He was a relatively young man, but I sometimes get the feeling that that was a decision.
From the time they launched the ship, they were obviously full of hope. The whole expedition lay ahead of them. Then gradually they started to realise that this wasn't going according as it should to plan. They were wintering in the ice and had no choice. Then it went from bad to worse when they lost the ship in the ice. I suppose they would be the 2 lowest points in the expedition, I suppose, particularly in my compositions of music. First one is the losing of the ship, and then when Shackleton ultimately had to make the decision to leave his crew. I would imagine that was a horrific time for them, and full of contradictions and emotion, really, because they were saying goodbye. I'd imagine they felt deep down that he wouldn't make it and they would all perish.
There were six of us aboard the little boat when we set sail on Easter Monday 1916. Three Irishmen, McCarthy, Crean and I. With Vincent, Worsley and the carpenter McNeish, whose work had made our little vessel that speck more likely to survive. We set our course on April 24th, just a day before the ice closed in. And as we rowed away, there on the shore were Frank Wilde and the other men I'd left in his charge, trusting we could bring the help they needed. Their hands raised in farewell.
Now, you mentioned that he never lost a man. Now, he was liked. Back in the Scott expedition, the original one which he was on, he was the most popular individual among the officers. And he didn't go in for the old military protocol or the naval protocol, which separated the officers from the men sort of stuff. He was, all things to all men, an excellent person, people person, was he not?
He was. When he was interviewing people who were going to go on journeys with them, I mean, he interviewed them for their skills, which would be useful to him, but he also looked out for people with good humour, people who could sing, people who could do a turn, because he realised that actually these journeys of 2, 3, 4 years, you needed people who would get on well together. They didn't just need to be experts in their own field, but they needed to be people. He was ahead of his time in that regard. And when the Endurance went down, one of the things, they had to decide what they were going to take and what they weren't going to take, because they were going to be on an ice floe and then they were going to be at the mercy of the winds for a long time. One of the things he insisted be taken was a banjo belonging to one of the guys who was on the boat, because he felt at least we'll have music, we'll have something to keep our spirits up.
Men need diversion. Books were available from the ship's library. There were other diversions. A mass haircutting. Debates, slideshows, mock trials. The show must always go on. All of this continued to an unceasing soundtrack of creaking, sighing, shifting, groaning, grinding, moaning of the ice about us and below us. And often, in the dark hours, I thought about how small we were. We men and our little vessel on so great a sea, and about a task that seemed so important and yet so inconsequential.
On that voyage, the last voyage, the one in which he died, some of the guys he recruited had been on the previous voyage and hadn't been paid for the previous voyage. So they still came with them. That's a measure of how much they liked this man. You know, it's a quite remarkable thing. Now, this, of course, has implications for management theory. You don't deal with this. If you're in the job for a length of time, you'll be sent off on managerial courses. Now, the Shackleton style of management, there must be a style of management that's Shackleton style, which is sort of knowing your team intimately and being able to relate to them very well, this kind of thing. Is this a viable, for somebody who made such a mess of business, it seems a bit ironic that we should be talking about him as a recommendation for management. But anyway, develop that a bit, will you?
Yeah, it's one of the aspects of, and I suppose I'm not in a position to criticise, because here I am talking about Shackleton and I've done a book on him and we've done this musical work based around his life. I'm very wary of Shackleton being, for the very reasons that you say, I'm very wary of him being slotted in and being used as a tool of management because of those very things that you're talking about. You know, I think a lot of people have taken him as, you know, he's the ideal leader, he's the ideal team man, he's the ideal person who looks after everybody and gets them back. But as you say, in fact, as a businessman, he was a complete disaster. And I mean, if he were CEO of a company anywhere, it probably would be bankrupt in no time. and you know, it would be robbing Peter to pay Paul and keeping the money passing on. The aspect of his gifts as a manager were the human aspects. They had nothing to do with finance, because as you said, a lot of the men who were prepared to travel with them, who were prepared to risk their lives, and there was the very definite possibility of death on any of those expeditions, Yet, despite the fact that they hadn't been paid for previous work, there was something about him, there was that magnetic character that attracted them to him. But, you know, as a financial manager, as a business manager, I just don't see him fitting into that particular niche at all. And I think it was something that he'd have rebelled against himself. I think if he were alive, he would just be appalled by the notion that he was being held up as somebody. I mean, he probably would have done the lectures because he'd have needed the money, but I'm not sure he'd have been uncomfortable with the role that has been given to him.
Okay, go on to the third verse. Riotous, remember, we pointed out that one night before there. So, same routine again, all right? 2, 3, 4.
The worship leaves the still and burn. Our tabernacle floods the skies.
When I started to think about this, I thought about the fact Shackleton gave a lecture in Dublin at one stage in well, it became UCD and is now the concert hall. And I thought about that. I thought about the notion of Shackleton 100 years on. I thought about his ghost. And I was thinking of him in Dublin, but it actually we're doing it in Carlow initially, because it's closer to his home. So the seven pieces of spoken word are actually in the voice of Shackleton. It's his ghost looking back. And it begins, actually, he's talking. The opening piece that I've written is him talking to his wife, to Emily, about the fact that when he set off yet again, he left her behind with in a state of dissatisfaction with their marriage.
As ever, when I had been away, I longed for Emily. But once my feet were back on British soil, the net of domesticity seemed to tighten about me. Not that I didn't love my wife and children, of course I did. But I recognised in myself that schizophrenia of the traveller who will never be at peace in any one place, never call a place his home.
My name is Margaret Walsh. I am the manager and curator of the Athy Heritage Centre Museum in Athy. It's a community-run museum. We house the only permanent exhibit in the world to Ernest Shackleton, and that's why we decided to commission the CD and then the live performance of the Shackleton Endurance. It happened, I'd say, over a year ago. Ernest Shackleton was from County Kildare, so we wanted to kind of use the musicians and the talent that was in County Kildare to put it together. So this is going to be an actual stunning performance. It'll bring the whole Endurance expedition to life. At the minute, the performance is a one-night show. It's the premier centenary performance because of the 100-year anniversary. The hope is that it will tour. Tickets can be got from the Athy Heritage Centre Museum, then also can be booked through the Carlo George Bernard Shaw Theatre, and some of the shops like Winkle's, Frank O'Brien's, The Gem, have them on sale in Athy as well. €15 is the ticket, so please come along.
I suppose, really, if people come along on Sunday night, they can expect to literally relive the Endurance Expedition through the ghost of Shackleton in John McKenna's fantastic narration. We're very hopeful that we have captured the elements of emotion in the music that I've composed for it. And, of course, the visuals will drop them right back to the actual footage during the different stages of the expedition. And, coincidentally, it's the 26th of October is the night. And on the 26th of October 1914, Shackleton actually left Buenos Aires. So to the night, it's 100 years. So, you know, it's quite a coincidence.
Okay, go on to the third verse. Flag of the adventure. Last three will kind of go loud, louder and very loud.